Good afternoon to everyone, and it is my great pleasure again to introduce our show. I'm Lina Mirmont with my another edition, Lina Live, and I'm quite impatient to introduce our extraordinarily special guest, Dr. Ellen Kamai. I probably will be not very complete if I just try to summarize Dr. Kamai's accomplishments. And I have a little difficulties to match her formal accomplishments with her true professional understanding of the nutrition, holistic world, botanical secrets, herbal knowledge, which took her so much deeper than even sometimes regular doctor would accomplish. I'm sure this comment perhaps will not be too friendly to allopathic medicine, but I just was truthful, honest, and trying to prepare for this program. I truly was very much tuned into so many questions. I almost felt like an impatient faucet who can spill out so many problems and have this golden opportunity to have a conversation with Dr. Ellen Kamai. Dr. Kamai, welcome. And my first question will be somewhat a bit of loaded. Going through very traditional institutions like University of Rutgers, Columbia, Cornell, and Stony Brook Medical School, how those well-known medical world you were able to combine with your holistic, nutritional, and herbal world, which I mentioned in my introduction?
Well, thank you so much for having me on as a guest today, Lina. And actually, where I would like to start is by defining the correct use of the word traditional, because that word traditional is used in all kinds of ways. For instance, people might mention traditional medicine when they are talking about conventional medicine. So traditional medicine is the use of organic herbs and other kinds of natural therapies that have been used for many thousands of years with a very high level of efficacy and very low level of adverse effects or risks. So these would include such things as traditional Chinese medicine, Ayurvedic medicine, which is the ancient herbal traditions of India. It might also include Native American herbal medicine, Western herbal medicine, and other therapies such as massage therapies, naturopathic medicine. These are the things that actually would be called traditional. On the other hand, conventional medicine would include what goes on in hospitals and most doctors' offices today, and there's many fine words to describe that, including conventional, mainstream, and allopathic. So let's be really clear on the correct and honorable use of the word traditional.
Fantastic clarification. Frankly, myself, I was in a little fog, and I certainly welcome your clarification, because right there, it is focusing our understanding, perception, and just simply know what we're looking for. I like, if possible, to divide our conversation in some big issue questions, but also, if possible, to focus and to be more meticulous in some specific issues, specific problems, just for example, probiotic, or some issues which will lead to understand everyone, every human being's responsibility toward themselves, or some people who will have some specific issues and will want to contact you for that. So if I can start from a bigger issue, we are living today, unfortunately, in somewhat, I call it, a hidden war between allopathic medicine and alternative medicine. And you just clarified those differences. Regrettably, instead of feeling cooperation between those two worlds and complement them, just a regular consumer very often feels absolutely lost because the bombarded information can be right and wrong in both those worlds. How would you make us more aware and easy orient ourselves and see how we can complement those two different worlds rather than to drown in them?
Okay, well, as usual, we really should study history because so often, for some reason, humans tend to just keep doing the same thing over and over again. It didn't work the first time, it didn't work the second time, but for some reason they just keep doing it. So I've written many, many books, and people can find them at naturalnurse.com under books. But in the book called The Natural Medicine Chest, I have a full chapter called The History of Natural Medicine. So even if we just come up to more modern times, such as starting with the 1700s, we can look at the botanical medicine movement in America and very specific individuals, such as the history of such gentlemen as Samuel Thompson or the eclectic movement. The eclectic movement created an improved standardized type of botanical medicine by preparing each medicine in a similar manner. And there were specific people, such as pharmacist John Uri Lloyd, who lived from 1849 to 1936, who established the Eclectic Medical Institute of Cincinnati, which still is there, by the way. And so all of these things are actually in history. Now, when you look at the suppression of natural medicine, many important events led to the decline of all doctors knowing about the herbal and natural forms of medicine. And this happened right around World War II, very specifically because certain American medical institutions wanted to promote pharmaceuticals. And, of course, that's the same thing that's going on today. So, for instance, Johns Hopkins University became the model for medical schools. And what they did was go around and visited all the medical schools. And this was a particular person. This was a gentleman named Abraham Flexner. And there was something called the Flexner Report, which was made in 1910. And that really heralded the rise of white male-based medicine and attempted to completely shut down all the education about natural medicine. And Flexner actually went around to various universities at the time that were medical schools and said that they would receive funding as long as they eliminated all teaching about natural healing methods, which had been part of the regular medical school education up till that time. And by the way, this was also coordinated by the AMA and Andrew Carnegie. So very, very interesting. So Flexner actually visited 162 medical schools, which were in existence at that time, and offered them funding if they did cooperate with suspending the teaching of natural medicine.
As expression goes, you're living proof of what you preaching what you know, because what you just said, the amount of schools you visited, and as I mentioned in the beginning, the amount of accomplishments which you have certainly proves that all this energy, wisdom, and complete fluent knowledge of your world makes your life extremely fruitful, very, very productive. I like to tell my listeners that I have just a most fascinating guest, Dr. Ellen Kamai, whose accomplishments were traveling from major Ivy League universities like Cornell and Columbia. Also, I like to ask you, Dr. Kamai, you mentioned your books. I certainly would go into it, but since you mentioned this already, I'd like for you to tell our listeners where they can find you, where they can truly be excited by your website, which I found spectacularly interesting. And I will let you know, just to let us to let us all know how we can find you, your books, your products.
Okay. Well, the easiest thing is always to go to the website naturalnurse.com, and then of course at the top we have various links, such as radio shows, because I do 3 radio shows a week, and I'm so happy to be a guest on your show, and books, lectures, schedules where we do on-ground teaching of botanical classes, how to gather your own plants, make your own medicine. We also have a certification course, an herbal certification course, where people can take classes either online or on ground. That means they actually come there and visit with us for some of the classes, and then get certified in various aspects of natural medicine, herbal medicine, homeopathy, energy medicine, all different aspects of self-care or caring for patients if you're already a healthcare professional. So that's there, all kinds of information. And, of course, now with Facebook. So you can go to Facebook, The Natural Nurse, for just daily updates.
Well, using a little bit of my area where I feel at home, because being a journalist, I'm also a musician, I would say that you're just about as a symphonic orchestra in medicine and the world of everything which can grow, can speak, has its own color, taste, and, of course, benefits. Dr. Kamai, I'd like to go into some specific questions. You gave us a fantastic panorama of a history, some classifications of a different type of a medicine. And now I'd like to get into some specific questions. In fact, what comes in mind immediately, my reason of meeting you, which was somewhat a frustrating point, where I had the pleasure to meet you on the phone, asking questions about evening primrose. And by you answering those questions, you actually indicated that you know more than at that time you could even share. So I will give you an ample opportunity now to tell us about evening primrose, because I cannot imagine anyone who would not benefit from this substance.
Well, actually, there could be people who would not benefit from evening primrose oil, because one of the first things to do if you're going to supplement, and you know, supplements can be very, very useful, and I do work with a supplement company, that's Nature's Answer. Supplements can be very useful. However, that's why they are called supplements, because truthfully, they should be used after the focus is completed in terms of healthy eating and exercise, and then we can look to supplements. But a very good thing, if you want to do a high-level supplementation profile, the best thing to do is to first get an analysis of your individual needs. So every single supplement can be tested. For instance, vitamins, like if you were going to test something like vitamin A or vitamin D or vitamin B or any of those things, then you could see what, in fact, you needed. Now, in terms of evening primrose oil, what you would want to test for is essential fatty acids, because that is what they actually offer, and in particular, gamma-linolenic acid. So different healthy fats can give you different essential oils. So evening primrose oil would be something a similar GLA, which is gamma-linolenic acid, that you would get from blackcurrant seed oil and borage oil. Now, these are a fatty acid that the body converts to a hormone-like substance called prostaglandin, in particular, prostaglandin 1. Now, why that's important is because our body naturally creates various kinds of prostaglandins. Some of them are pro-inflammatory, that means they cause more inflammation, and some of them are anti-inflammatory, which is, of course, the ones you want that bring down inflammation. And by the way, anyone looking for a very full and complete and evidence-based discussion about this really should refer to my book called Arthritis, the Alternative Medicine Definitive Guide, because obviously to offset arthritis, you need a lot of things that are anti-inflammatory. Now, this is why I'm saying not everybody should use evening primrose oil, because if you have no need for additional omega-3 acids, in particular GLA, then evening primrose oil is not something that you would want to take. So although it is something excellent for many, many people, it doesn't mean everybody should take it. That's the thing. For one thing, it can interact. All herbs and supplements can interact with various things, such as other herbs and supplements and, of course, with pharmaceutical drugs.
Well, the more explanation you share with us, the more questions are breeding here in my head. And I will say that I certainly will proceed with the next question. However, I believe that this program has somewhat an octopus effect, because you bring so much information and so much knowledge that it does take time to transform it to your own personal needs.
That's true. And now, I will say, let me just mention who probably does need evening primrose oil. So people with PMS, you know, women who have premenstrual syndrome known as PMS, if you have inflammatory processes such as diabetes, scleroderma, eczema, and other skin conditions, those have been shown to react very positively to evening primrose oil supplementation.
That is very, very helpful specific mentioning. I will interrupt myself a little bit with my next question by saying that actually there is a group of us who is listening to you because we are representing the Miremont Art Center. And just to let you know a little bit about that, we're trying to actually merge artistic life with a healthy living, considering a highly stressful profession and, needless to say, very stressful global world. I am making these comments because right next to me is my producer, my colleague, one of the finest composer people knew and admire him for, who is quite knowledgeable at his own rights in nutrition because of his own personal needs, goals. And to say a little bit more, Julian Lampert is my son and best friend. He also wants to participate in this interview because he let me know that he does have a questions for you. So I will transfer my time to him, and after he will be through with his questions, I will be continuing with mine. Meanwhile, I wanted to make sure that our listeners are aware of the fact that this is call-in show with a very special guest, Dr. Ellen Kamai, whose knowledge seems to be totally unlimited in the world of nature. She is a scientist, she is the doctor, and she deeply knows what she is doing in her world of major natural issues.
Dr. Kamai, thank you very much again for joining us for this program. It's incredibly informative to hear what you have to say. And when I was much younger, I faced some health issues which were resolved very quickly thanks to natural medicine and actually not without very intense intervention here from my mother. So I'm deeply sympathetic with your work. One question regarding yogurts that I wanted to ask, and I know that among some of my colleagues, I'm also asking for them this question. Despite the dictatorship, so to speak, that conventional medicine is trying to impose upon us, it thankfully is not entirely suppressing the huge amounts of research, the access to research, particularly that comes from other countries. And it's fascinating how much science fairly recently is proving the treatments which have existed for, as you said, for thousands of years, and people didn't bother putting in the effort to try and prove whether they work or not. People just operated from knowledge, but also intuition. My question here is about the science behind yogurts. Obviously, the optimal way of consuming yogurt is the kind that's made from raw milk. And my question is, are yogurts that are sold in markets, even the ones that are made from organic goat or cow's milk or sheep's milk, are they entirely useless because of the pasteurization process or not? And the reason I ask this question is because I've never found yogurts made from raw milk. From what I gather, that's so far only possible to eat if one prepares it oneself, which we did in our family all the time back in Russia, but because that culture is rooted quite deeply in fermented foods. But I've never seen that in markets in this country. Could you comment on that?
Certainly. I always made my own from my own goats. So I fed the goats, I milked the goats, and I made the yogurt at home. And that is by far the best way to get completely natural yogurt. Now, in terms of the usefulness of commercially prepared yogurt, that varies. Number one, many, many people are severely lactose intolerant. And everyone really would be wise to get a food allergy profile done. It's called an IgG food allergy profile. If you go to your conventional allergist, they will usually do a different test, which is called an IgE food allergy. But that's not the useful one. What you need is called IgG. Now, if you have a sensitivity to milk, then using yogurt is often not the best way to go, although there are people who have a sensitivity to overly processed, like you said, pasteurized, homogenized milk, but they do fine with raw goat's milk. Now, in terms of making your own now, you either have to own your own goat or find somebody in your area who sells raw goat's milk and purchase it, and you could make it yourself because you can buy the culture medium. And once you have the culture, once you've purchased it once, you can just save some and transfer it all the time to your next batch. The other thing you can do is buy organic milk yogurt, and they even have organic goat's yogurt in the stores. Do I think that's useful? I definitely do. I feel there's no problem with it. Now, that's a long way off from what you see on TV, such as you know, Activa or whatever these commercial yogurts are, which are absolutely horrible. What you need to do when you're assessing any product is turn the product around to the back and read the label. And the first thing you want to always read with any food or supplement for that matter is called other ingredients. And that's what you want to read first. And if your other ingredients have things in them like sugar, flavoring, FD&C dye, benzoate, that's a very common preservative in both supplements and foods. By the way, Nature's Answer never allows any benzoate in any supplement because benzoates can disintegrate into benzene, which is highly carcinogenic. And you'll even find these things in things like commercial yogurt.
So when you mention that you recommend the use of organic milk, you're speaking of, you're not objecting to organic milk that is also pasteurized, or are you speaking strictly of organic raw milk?
No, I think the even the one that is no longer raw, because many people do not have access to any kind of raw milk, there are whole states where any kind of raw milk is outlawed. I feel that regular organic milk that is used, even if it's pasteurized, the yogurt is added in after the pasteurization of the milk. So the yogurt is not deactivated by the pasteurization process.
Oh.
It's not the full yogurt that's pasteurized. It's the milk that might be used as a starting material that actually does not change the biological activity of the culture medium, which is some kind of acidophilus or bifidus or other kind of beneficial bacteria, which is added as a fermentation culture medium after the pasteurization process is completed. So like everything else, there's a wide range. So what would be best is raise your own goat. If you can't do that, find someone else who does and buy it directly from them and do your own culture. If you can't do that, go to the health food store and purchase organic raw goat's milk. If you can't do that, like that, and we continue up the line. And then we stop short of saying, and it's okay to just use the commercially prepared. And if it says sugar-free, it's worse yet, because then it's going to have all the artificial sweeteners, which are highly toxic. So that's where you want to draw the line.
And I'm also assuming that with all of the above, the best yogurt to have is the kind that's made from whole milk, and to avoid the low-fat labels, because that's that just will lead to more sugar and a highly deceptive label.
Well, not necessarily. Just because the milk, again, is non-fat does not mean that they don't add sugar in to the process of removing the fat. On the other hand, to your point, certainly if it's whole milk, then it is not processed. It's less processed, let's put it that way, because each step away from whole involves some kind of technology, even removing the fat, although no sugar is used to remove the fat.
I see.
I think Julian is ready to put his shoes and go saying hello to your goat. He is extremely, very much taken by your answer. And I am going to use this segment of the conversation and go right into probiotic. Go into our intestinal flora and ask you a few specific questions which been just recently discussed here with so much confusion. I would say every week if I read about something, there are more billions in the potency, and I came to a frustrating answer saying to myself, it's much better to have that many billions in a bank rather than in probiotic. So where we stand with this constantly changing potency of probiotic, which one to take, which one are not?
Well, actually, that's a very good question, because what the research shows, interestingly enough, is that probiotics can actually be used as a seeding mechanism. That means if you get high-quality probiotics into the intestines, then it tends to actually grow by itself and thereby inhibit the growth of harmful bacteria. And, of course, that helps to promote good digestion, boost immune function, and increase resistance to infection. So rather than look for the millions and billions and trillions, because there really is no good scientific data showing that if you use, let's say, 6.5 billion colony-forming units of specific kinds versus a lower amount of a different microorganism, that you get so much of a difference in terms of clinical outcome. So sticking with just a good whole food kind of probiotic, read your labels, and let's always go with less is better. When I say less is better, I mean the less things that are added to the product under what's called other ingredients. So if you turn it around, if you're in the health food store and you're looking, and it says something like Acidophilus, and it might say bifidus bacteria, and there's other bacteria that are known to be positive, which it may or may not have, and that's it, that's a good product. If you're starting to look at other ingredients, flavoring agents, thickening agents, carrageenan, all kinds of sweeteners, that's what you don't want. And that's much more important than the millions and billions that they claim on the front of the label.
I wanted to ask you suggestions about better companies, because prices are skyrocketing and it is not necessarily corresponds to the quality of the product. I like to ask you a natural question. Is your Nature's Answer company promotes certain probiotics? Are there some other companies which you would suggest?
Yes, I think there are many companies that have excellent probiotics on the market. And what you need to do is actually read the label and see what's in it. Now, Nature's Answer does have some very good digestive enzymes. We have some probiotic products. But we're not specifically specializing in only probiotics. I would say our specialty items are actually herbs, because when we make herbal products, we bring in whole herb plants, and we are one of the major extractors in the entire industry. So when we do an extraction, we use glass-lined stainless steel to get out the active constituents of the herbs in a specific process that's called bioculation. So that's where I would say that it really, really shines. We are not growing and harvesting our own probiotics. We're buying the probiotics already formulated and using it in certain probiotic products.
Are there any herbs would you suggest in your company which will complement probiotic assimilation or any other herbs which will be in a family of digestion and also supporting good flora?
Oh, of course. Almost every herb supports good flora, and then on different levels. Like, let's say you want to decrease the proliferation of something like Candida albicans, and I do write a full protocol about this in my book, Arthritis, and also in my book called Weight Loss. So how you would do that, sometimes you have to use something that is a strong antimicrobial to get rid of some of the negative bacteria, which is called cleansing and detoxification. Is one of the things we do during that part of the process. And then we would use probiotics to build back up the presence of the healthy bacteria. So another thing is with Acidophilus and Bifidus, the healthy kinds of bacteria actually manufacture B vitamins, including niacin, folic acid, biotin, and vitamin C. So these are very, very good. If you want to use certain herbs that are helpful in terms of natural antibiotics, Nature's Answer products are unsurpassed, and that would include such products as oil of oregano. Oil of oregano is very, very powerful at basically deleting a lot of the negative bacteria. And then you could use probiotics to increase the presence of the natural positive bacteria. Another excellent antimicrobial is oleopine, which is the active constituent out of the olive leaf. And that's a very gentle antimicrobial that is really helpful. Then if viruses are a problem, then you want to move towards something that inhibits viral activity. So that would include Sambucus, which is an elderberry extract from the elderberry tree. And we know the mechanism of action. It actually stops viruses from being able to duplicate themselves. So though, although it's not directly antimicrobial, it does not kill the viruses, it inhibits their proliferation and thereby gets rid of them from the body. And then you would follow that up with probiotics to increase positive intestinal flora. Now, those that I mentioned now are not directly related to digestion, but that's where you start. Then, if you want digestive aids, you will always look for peppermint. And there's a lot of very safe natural herbs such as peppermint. Chamomile is excellent for reestablishing healthy digestion. In fact, the Genesis species name of chamomile is mother of the stomach. So this goes back to ancient times when it was understood how very useful chamomile is as a digestive aid. So there's all kinds of ways to go about it. The first thing is, what are we eating and what are we thinking? That's where all health has to begin in terms of improvement.
I will continue with my next question, picking up on your very excellent point regarding the process where we're handling first bacteria, negative bacteria, I should say, and taking as a starting point to build a good bacteria and ultimately better digestion. I would, before my question, I would like again to make sure that every listener of ours aware that we have extraordinarily knowledgeable, very exciting guest, especially for the times we're living in, with the stress, with a very quick need for a certain style of life, of food and supplements. I like to make sure that Dr. Ellen Kamai can be found on her website with her books, with her products, and actually some association with her colleagues. It's in my mind, Ellen, you have a whole institution which you created, you dealing with this world of nature since 1973. Many of my listeners have not been born yet, and you already been queen of that incredible knowledge. I like to make a little bridge between this probiotic and cleaning issue to one question. Are you pro colonic irrigation?
Yes, very much so. And I write about it in depth in both my arthritis book and my weight loss book. But it has to be done, you know, in the right way by trained professionals, because I actually personally know of two deaths that occurred on a colonic table. And that, you know, anything is possible. But in general, a very, very useful therapy. And it's interesting that Mae West and most of the great stars throughout history who knew about natural medicine and used it certainly prolifically throughout time was a very big fan of that. Because, you know, when you think about it, it's kind of like giving, instead of taking a shower on the outside of your skin, it's washing everything on the inside. And there's various kinds of colonics, too, everything from enemas to true colonic lavage.
You mentioned that you do describe this in your book, and be honest with you, when I discovered that, I was so thrilled that I can comfortably ask that question, because this is one of the most controversial issue. I wanted to focus on a negative one. First of all, you already said there are two deaths. It's quite a threatening thing. I'm sure it's a very rare situation. Is that because of the certain predisposition of certain patients? What we need to be aware, of course.
Yes, that's your very book true, and that's an excellent question. So what we did was we actually did a medical history. People could not just walk into our colonic facility and just say, I want to get a colonic. They had to visit a doctor, and it had to be reviewed that they did not have certain particular medical conditions. So two of those would be, one is diverticulitis, which is an inflammation in the intestines that can lead to a thinning and weakening of the tissue. Another would be any kind of advanced abdominal surgery of any kind that might lead to an area inside that perhaps had stitching but may have scar tissue and therefore weakened when there's some pressure on it in terms of water that's being used in the colonic lavage. But for the most part, like you said, it's really an overwhelmingly safe procedure.
And I think in your book, but I'm not sure, I read so much about you and a number of issues just jump into my soul, but some of them need to be a little bit digested with the time. Did you recommend certain places, certain reliable offices for that?
Well, you know, you'd have to look into it. I mean, certainly what colonic therapists should be doing is have you visit your physician first and be pre-cleared, for instance, no one with cancer of the intestines, things like that, and then come in with a note from your doctor. There's a wide variety of institutions that offer colonics. Sometimes it's in a doctor's office, particularly that would be, of course, a holistic physician, in which case you can be assured that the person doing the therapy is a licensed professional. And that is what I believe everyone should be who is actually doing colonics. So that includes such people as nurses, nurse practitioners, physician's assistants, and physicians, rather than just lay people who perhaps took one or two courses in colon cleansing.
It's a very, very critical point. Similar happens in the acupuncture world, where true Chinese knowledge can be somewhat very quick fix learning, and then you end up not getting what you're looking for. So
that's a very good point. And, you know, it's interesting because those people who have the least training are usually MDs. And they can get a license to do acupuncture after a weekend workshop versus a true traditional Chinese medical practitioner who might have been studying acupuncture in depth for 20 years. So you're very right about that.
Extraordinary. I regrettably noticing the time and cautiously understanding that you're extraordinarily busy and dynamically involved in your various activities. I hope that perhaps we can continue this conversation. As a conclusion, I am frankly fighting with myself whether to ask you a few specific questions or to ask one very burning general question, and I guess the general question is winning. So I just wanted to ask you a general question, maybe a little loaded, but your orientation will be highly valuable. We all are subjects of a tremendous flow in information. Many have weekly or daily letters, news, information, tremendous amount of changes. Computer, of course, makes it even more challenging and resourceful. What kind of specific guidance would you recommend, if any, to make one orient himself or herself in this vast majority of information? What are the most critically important points would you recommend to focus on?
The first thing I would do is learn calming techniques for the inner being. So that would include meditation and yoga. That's where you start. You start there because you have to have a very calm and strengthened inner being in order to access the craziness of the outside information sources that are coming in. And once you feel that inner knowing, you actually can use your own intuition quite a bit. Of course, you can always check out resources. You can go to PubMed. That's an actual place to look up true scientific data. But first, you can go with what feels right to you. What feels right to you? And only pursue looking more deeply into those things that actually feel right to your inner being. That would be a good place to start.
It is a wonderful suggestion, because somehow you combine an abstract with a concrete. Meditation and yoga, very objective substance, so well known. And yet an abstract is because we cannot measure our emotions and our intuition, yet it is very powerful. So I think it's very, very helpful. It creates certain self-confidence in next time all of us will approach a new information, new article. And mostly important, it will give us an orientation in between what we'll call regular medicine, and to have very open mind, including all elements which you described so clearly, so powerfully. And I cannot really thank you enough for giving us this cyclopedic journey just in less than an hour. I can only imagine what's happening in your workshops, what's happening in your lectures. And next step to it, again, to give you an opportunity and to let us know where you can be found with your website and all other information, which is so critically important for all of us.
Well, thank you so much for the opportunity, Lena. And again, the best place to find what we're doing is at naturalnurse.com or Facebook, The Natural Nurse. And I also answer questions all day at naturesanswer.com. So that's another wonderful place to look for me. I'm pretty easy to find, although I'm very often traveling and on the road, but I still am available virtually.
I wanted to thank you very much for this dialogue. And as I said, this is a beginning. We will count on your open schedule, at least in some sense, and we are very much looking forward to learn more from you, to learn more from ourselves. And on this note, I will be wishing you much of success and this continuation and this fantastic, wonderful journey. My guest today was Dr. Ellen Kamai, and I would certainly hope that this is just the beginning of very fantastic communication about our lives, how to feel better, how to think deeper, and how to be healthier. Ellen, thank you so much again.
And thank you too. Be well.
And that was another edition of Lena Live. I'm Lena Mirmont in my last moments with music, and wishing you all as peaceful moments as you can experience, just like this music is. From all of us here, with our thanks to BBS. Until next time, in 2 weeks.